Well, greetings everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide daily over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, business, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on the cover story when we come back. You know, we Americans are the most litigious people in the world, and we believe in our lawyers with a kind of religious fervor, and we've been taught from early childhood that he who represents himself in court has a fool for a client. But what would you say if a plumber said that? What if a plumber said, he who fixes his own pipes has a fool for a client? Or what if a carpenter said, well, he who fixes his own steps has a fool for a client? Now, doesn't our common sense tell us that a plumber or carpenter who couldn't fix his own pipes or steps has to be incompetent? Well, my common sense tells me that a lawyer who can't represent himself in court has to be just as incompetent as that plumber or that carpenter. Now, listen to James Nielsen. He's a professor of law at the Hastings Law School. And here's what he had to say about lawyers. He said, it is a fact that a student can graduate from this, the fourth largest law school in the United States, without ever having written a pleading, a contract, a will, a promissory note, or a deed. And he said it's worse than that. Most students actually graduate from this law school without ever having seen a real honest-to-God pleading, contract, will, promissory note, or a deed. And a student can graduate without having set foot in a courtroom and without ever having spoken to or having set foot in a courtroom or having spoken to or on behalf of a person in need of advice or counsel. And he said, a student can graduate without once being exposed to the operation of the rules of court. Now, whatever else may be said about this license issued by the state bar, let it be said that for these students and their clients, it's a cruel hoax. Now, that was Professor James Nielsen of the Hastings Law School. Now, if you'd like more information about courtroom strategy and procedure, why don't you call us here at the law school? The number is 417-273-4967, and be sure to ask for our free general law CD package while you're at it. That's a four-hour commentary on the law school, and it's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative, and best of all, it's free of charge. That number again, 417-273-4967. Now, our school, Courtroom Strategy and Procedure, is available on compact disc for adult home education, and if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, and then click on to the archives page, and you can download that free general law CD package right there. Again, that's georgegordon.org, and then go to the archives page. What do we mean by the cover story? You know, anytime you want to lie to somebody or deceive somebody, you have to have a cover story. There has to be some reason that we're doing this, you know. So when we go back to the Iraq War, the cover story was weapons of mass destruction. Why do you want to go to war against Iraq? Well, we want to go to war against Iraq because Saddam Hussein has these weapons of mass destruction that he's going to use against us. Well, excuse me, boys and girls, but do you remember that the alleged attackers that flew those airplanes into the trade towers were Saudi Arabians? There wasn't a single Iraqi in the bunch. But George Bush said, hey, wait, whoop, whoop, whoop. And then Colin Powell, remember, he went into the United Nations and he made a hell of a case. He said, we've got pictures and we've got all kinds of evidence here that the Iraqis have these weapons of mass destruction. Now, weapons of mass destruction are what? Airplanes? You know, civilian airliners? No. Weapons of mass destruction are nuclear weapons, gas, biological weapons. You know, things that the United States and Russia and China and a whole bunch of other countries in the world have. Now, if the Iraqis have these weapons of mass destruction, we need to go to war against them and take it away from them. I'm not quite sure that I understood why. China has weapons of mass destruction. Shouldn't we go to war against China, take those weapons of mass destruction away from them so that they won't harm anybody? So these cover stories are usually, you know, if you think about it for a minute, they're usually pretty flip. They really don't make a lot of sense. And I'm not sure that we spend a lot of time critically analyzing or even applying a little common sense to some of the cover stories that come out of our government or come out of our colleges and universities and medical establishments. We're going to take a look at vaccination, for instance. Why do we have vaccination? The cover story is because it prevents disease. But does it prevent disease? Well, for instance, last year there were 69 reported cases of polio. All 69 cases of reported polio came from people who had been vaccinated. Does vaccination cause disease? Well, in those 69 cases, it didn't. Well, then why would you want to be vaccinated? Well, I don't. Well, somebody else comes along and says, well, it's the law. The cover story is, it's the law. Well, let's analyze that one for a minute. Are all laws good laws? should we follow every law that's been enacted? You know, back in the war years in Germany, they had laws over there that said what we need to do is lock up Jews and kill them. Was that a good law? Just because it's the law of Germany, it wasn't the law of the United States or Canada. We didn't lock Jews up and kill them. What if we were to pass a law here in the United States that says we need to lock up and kill all Mexicans? Would that be a good law? Isn't there a law that says thou shalt not kill? Didn't we get that from God? You know, thou shalt not commit adultery. I mean, we've got laws that license whorehouses. But is a law that licenses a whorehouse in Nevada necessarily a good law? We don't have those laws in Missouri. You can't license a whorehouse here. Does that mean that the people of Nevada are wiser and smarter than we are because they license whores and whorehouses in Nevada and we don't? Or does that mean that the people of Missouri are being deprived of a vital public service because we don't have licensed whorehouses? I'm not fully persuaded that it's the law is a good cover story. That's what it is. It's a cover story, but is it a true, accurate, and correct cover story? So when we talk about firearms, vaccination, census, voting, licensing, income tax, the draft, the black market, journalism, Social Security, you know, are these necessarily good laws, good practices, or should I be involved in them? Now, most of us have a right to choose. You know, if you don't want to be vaccinated, you don't have to be. If you don't want to participate in the census, you don't have to. If you don't want to vote, you don't have to. See, last time I heard, there's no law that requires you to vote. But if you can have a law that requires you to participate in the census and require you to be vaccinated, why can't you have a law that requires you to vote? What if we had a law that said, if you don't vote, we're going to lock you up for 10 years in the penitentiary? Do you think we should have a law that requires you to vote? I mean, I'm not sitting here arguing about voting. You know, maybe voting is the greatest thing since sliced white bread. But don't you think that people ought to choose, you know, whether they want to vote or not? And if a guy decides, I don't want to vote, and he doesn't vote, and then bad people are elected to office because bad people vote for bad people and good people don't vote, well, and that's kind of his fault, isn't it? I mean, he should have got out there and voted for the other guy, shouldn't he? And he didn't do that. And so we have a saying here in the United States, don't complain about who's holding office if you didn't vote. Well, you know, why can't I complain about somebody that holds public office whether I vote or not? You know, if somebody does something that's wrong, that harms me or harms other people or that just doesn't make any sense, you know, like I didn't vote in the last election. And then I noticed that the current administration here gave $15.1 trillion to the mega banks in New York and Wall Street. And I piped up and I said, that's a crock of baloney. That's really bad. It's bad for the people that have mortgages. And foreclosing on these mortgages, I said, that's a bad public policy. I don't think we should do that. Some guy says to me, well, you don't have any right to complain because you didn't vote. Well, 50 million other people voted against the current administration. And they're all sitting out there saying, hey, this is a bad policy and we don't like it. Why do I have to vote in order to express an opinion? But that's the cover story that we're given. See, if you didn't vote, then you don't have any right to open your mouth and say anything. Why is free speech attached to whether or not I voted? So that's why I thought I'd bring the subject to your attention, that the cover stories oftentimes are lies. But we have to have a cover story in order to promote this lie. Such as, the Federal Reserve is a government institution. Well, it isn't. The Federal Reserve Bank is not a government agency. And then I think I'll read you a citation or two, you know, from our Supreme Court. You know, they've had an opportunity a time or two to rule on that, to decide that. And they've reported to us that they're not. It's a private bank. So why would we want to give $15 trillion to a private bank? Well, the cover story is that it's a government agency or institution. And that we needed to give this money to this Federal Reserve Bank, give them the authority to give it to the mega banks, you know, Goldman Sachs and J.P. Morgan and gang, because we needed to save the economy. And I got to ask the question, why? Why do I need to save their economy? What's that got to do with me? They made some bad loans, they lost some money, and I need to go over there and pay for the bad loans? Let me ask you this. If I went out and bought something and it was a bad product, and then I came to you and I said, hey, listen, I went out and I paid $5,000 and I bought this bad product, and I think that you should give me $5,000 of your money based upon your output and your production to absolve me from the loss that I'm going to suffer from buying this bad product. And so my question would be, well, why would you have any duty, obligation, or responsibility to buy my $5,000 bad product to bail me out of my bad decision? And I think you would agree that, well, I don't have any such responsibility. So I got to ask the question, well, why do you have a responsibility to bail out Goldman Sachs or Chase Manhattan or anybody else. You know, just the cover story is that if we don't bail the banks out, then the banks will go broke, and then they won't have any money to loan us. So what? If I go broke, I won't have any money to loan you either, but does that mean you should bail me out? Because now you bailed them out, and they're not lending you any money anyway. They didn't have any duty to lend you any money, whether they were broke or solvent. And so now you got the worst of both worlds. You already spent the money, and then they're not lending. And you don't have any recourse. But, you know, we buy into these cover stories. There's a cover story that goes with every one of these products. The president right now is selling his cover story, and it is, well, we didn't create this financial crisis. You see, the financial crisis was already in full bloom on George Bush's watch. Does the financial crisis occur in a month or two, or is it something that develops over decades? The financial crisis that we're suffering today got started with Franklin D. Roosevelt and House Joint Resolution 192, which at the time, the opponents of paper money said, this will lead to fiat currency and the collapse of the economy. Well, it didn't happen in 1933 or 43 or 55 or 62 or 79 or 89 or 94, but it ultimately has occurred. You know, the paper money, fiat currency has collapsed, and it's in the process of collapsing around the world. And now the desperate attempts by all of the big banks and central banks to save the day is in full swing. But does that mean that I should participate in saving these banks, or that I should get involved in paying taxes to save these institutions, or that I should participate in fiat currency, or that I should participate in the stock market? So I thought I would raise an issue or two like that. Let's take a look here at vaccination as an illustration. The general belief among people is that it's the law. You have to be vaccinated. And I got a little booklet here called How to Legally Avoid Unwanted Immunizations of All Kinds. And we'll cover that here in a minute, but let me tell you a story. The general consensus of opinion is that we need vaccination to prevent disease, and we need a high level of vaccination, about 90%, in order to prevent disease. And if the population is vaccinated up to 90%, then we won't get sick. Well, let me tell you a little story here. And one day I got a letter from the little note came from the school nurse, and they said, we're having vaccination day next Wednesday, and enclosed is a form, and we want you to sign this consent form so that your little boy Teddy can be vaccinated. Now notice, the notice for vaccination next Wednesday is accompanied by a consent form. Now, generally speaking, these people say, well, your kid's in school, there's a law here. It's the law. Your kid has to be vaccinated. Well, I don't deny that. The public schools do have a law. In this state, Missouri, all children attending public school must be vaccinated, and they got a list of things to be vaccinated with. Let me ask you this. Is every single child in Missouri vaccinated? Well, the answer to that's no. Why? Well, because there's some exceptions. So every single child in Missouri does not need to be vaccinated then, does he? Well, for instance, what if he had an autoimmune disease? And because of his autoimmune disease, vaccination would probably kill him. Could he be exempted from vaccination by a medical exemption? And the answer is certainly. How many of these medical exemptions are in effect in the state of Missouri? Thousands. How many medical exemptions are in effect in California? Thousands. Now, it's true, there's millions of children here in Missouri that are vaccinated, and there's millions of children in California that are vaccinated, but there are thousands of children that aren't. And that's because they're medically exempted. Any religious exemptions? Oh, yeah, sure. All kinds. Jehovah's Witnesses, Christian Scientists, and Hebrews, and a whole bunch of people. How many of those? Thousands. Okay, so now the people that are religious and the people that have medical problems aren't being vaccinated. Are they any threat, then, to the general population? If they are, shouldn't they all be quarantined? Shouldn't they all be taken and placed in sanitariums so that they don't threaten the rest of society? And yet you don't see sanitariums out here locking all of these thousands and thousands of people that have religious objections and that have medical problems. So evidently then, the medical establishment must not view them as being any particular threat to the general population that's all vaccinated, then are they? Well then, what if you were just one person in the general population, just one more? No. We've got several thousand people here that aren't vaccinated for religious and for medical reasons. What if we had one more person who didn't have a religious objection and didn't have any medical objection, and he just didn't want to be vaccinated for whatever reason? Would that then cause some great threat to the general population? I think you'd have to agree that, well, probably one more wouldn't do that. How about two more? What if two people that didn't have a religious or medical objection decided they didn't want to get vaccinated, and they didn't? Would that threaten the millions of people who are vaccinated? Well, what about 4, 8, 16, 32, 64, or a million, or half a million, or 5 million with that? All of a sudden, they say, well, we have to have a vaccination level of around 90% in order to make vaccination effective. What? You got a what? 90%. What difference does it make if 10% are vaccinated and 90% aren't? Oh, well, then vaccination wouldn't work. It wouldn't. Why not? Now, think about this for a minute. Remember my little boy? I get this notice from the school. I sat down, I wrote a little note, and I said, I'm writing you this note, and I'm sending it by way of my little boy, Ted, and I'm telling you, do not vaccinate my boy, Ted, next Wednesday. I object to the vaccination, and I don't want you to do that. And if there's going to be a problem next Wednesday and there's an accident and he might get vaccinated, then I'm going to be very upset, and litigation will probably follow. So I'll keep him home next Wednesday if you think there might be an accident. But if you think my boy Ted can come to school and you can just pass him by, then I'll go ahead and send him to school. So a few days later, the nurse called me on the telephone, and she said, I would like to talk to you about some things that you may not be aware of concerning vaccination. Now, I'm not the smartest guy in the world. I have read a book or two on vaccination. In fact, as I speak, I'm sitting here with a big file folder. Let me look at my file folder here. I'm going to say that this file folder has one inch thick of 8.5 by 11 pages. And they're photocopied, many of them on both sides, but most of them on one side, one inch of paper. I'm going to guesstimate that there's more than 100 pages here. Vaccination, dispelling the myths, you know. Warning, vaccinations are dangerous. And on it goes. I mean, I've got a lot of material here. I don't think I'm illiterate concerning vaccination. But by the same token, I wouldn't tell you that I know everything that there is to know about vaccinations. You know, when somebody says to me, I would like to tell you something that you may not know, I'm all ears. Well, sit down. Tell me what it is. Let me learn from you today. And so I said, say on. And this lady preached me a sermon for about, I'm going to say 15 minutes. It was a long story. And she told me about the history of vaccination, about how Louis Pasteur came along and various other guys, you know, came into the play and into the mix. And thank God for vaccinations, because without them, the world would all be dead, extinct. You know, vaccinations have saved humanity. And I thought to myself, we've been around here, you know, what do they tell us now? Millions and millions of years. They tell us, you know, we go to school and they say, mankind has been here for millions and millions of years, slowly evolving. But now we've evidently reached the peak of our evolutionary development, and now we're threatened with disease, and without vaccination, we're all going to die. I thought survival of the fittest would guarantee that some would be stronger than, and then they would survive, and the weak guys would all fall by the wayside. So survival of the fittest says you shouldn't be vaccinated because that would protect you. You're a weakling, and you should die so that your genes don't pollute the gene pool with weak human beings. Evidently, that doesn't apply. Survival of the fittest, which is one of the basic tenets of evolution, doesn't fit when we're trying to sell vaccinations, does it? So when this lady finished, I said, okay, well, now I've listened to your story. There isn't anything that you've told me that I didn't already know. I'm fully familiar with all of these cover stories. I've read them all. And I've read more than that, and I know a lot more than that, and I could tell you a whole bunch more, but I'm not going to tell you anything about vaccination. After all, you're a nurse. You're a college graduate, and I'm not. And then you have a license and I don't, and I'm going to presume that you're smarter than I am. So there isn't anything that I can teach you, and I'm not going to. So I'm just going to tell you, don't vaccinate my kid, because if you do, then there's going to be litigation, and I'm going to be upset, and you people are going to be upset, and so maybe I should just keep him home. And so she wanted me to explain to her why it was that I was so adamant about vaccination. So I said, well, okay, I'll tell you that much of the story. I said, is it true that if you're going to vaccinate all these little kids next week, are you vaccinating everybody? Yep, we're going to vaccinate everybody but little Teddy. I said, okay, now, this vaccination prevents disease. Is that true? And she said, it is. And it's going to prevent those children. If my little boy Teddy comes to school with measles, it won't affect any of the other little boys and girls because they're all vaccinated. They're all protected. Is that true? She said, it is. I said, okay. I said, now that those children are all vaccinated, they cannot give measles to my little boy, Ted, even though he's vulnerable. He hasn't been vaccinated. If he walks in the door, none of the other 39 little children can give him measles because they've all been protected, and they can't get measles and pass it on. Is that true? And she said, it is. I said, well, it solves our problem, doesn't it? If the other 39 children are all vaccinated, and that's well over 90%, they can't give the disease to my kid, and my kid can't give the disease to them. So why does my kid need to be vaccinated? And the conversation was in total silence for a long time. I don't know, 5 seconds, 10 seconds, something like that. You know, whenever you ask somebody a logical question and they don't have an answer for it, then they resort to ridicule. Or they may resort to, it's the law. The cover story. You have to resort to your cover story. Now, boys and girls, let's be intelligent here. Wake up and smell some coffee. If vaccination protected people from disease, then let's turn the shoe around and put it on the other foot. Let's suppose that let's have vaccination next Wednesday, but we're only going to vaccinate one kid. Just one. Is it true that vaccination protects you from disease? And the answer is yes. Okay, so one kid out of 40 has the vaccination. The other 39 don't. Now, the other 39 kids, not being protected, can they be infected by this one vaccinated child? And the answer is no, because he's vaccinated. He can't spread the disease. He can't get it. He can't incubate it. He can't spread it. The other children are protected from him, but they're not protected from one another. So if some one of those unvaccinated kids comes in with the measles, he could give the measles to any of those other 39, maybe all 39, but not to the one vaccinated kid. Because isn't vaccination for the purpose of preventing disease? Now, you know, it doesn't make any difference whether you got one vaccinated or you got 90% vaccinated. It either works or it doesn't. And if it doesn't work, then why do we want to get vaccinated? And if it does work, then why don't you just leave it up to us to choose? Huh? Why do you need a law that says, well, we want you to be vaccinated? I'm not denying that you're smarter than I am. You probably are. But as dumb as I am, I just don't want the vaccination. As dumb as I am, I just don't want to vote. As dumb as I am, I just don't want to participate in the census. So why is it necessary that you compel me to join you in your criminal activities? What's the purpose? And right away, the real purpose for vaccination is to make money. It costs $25 a shot, and it doesn't make any difference to the pharmaceutical industry whether the state pays for the shot and you get it free, or you pay for the shot and pay your pediatrician to give it to your kid. 50 million children in America get 35 shots. My little computer won't multiply that out. It goes out to 9,999,000,000, but I don't have enough space on my little Texas Instruments thingy over here. I mean, I got to almost have a Cray supercomputer here to work out these numbers. But suffice it to say that the pharmaceutical industry makes a lot of money making vaccine, and I don't deny that they should have the right to make vaccine, and you should have the right to ingest it if you so desire. I don't believe that I should get in the way of 89% or 88% of Americans who want to be vaccinated. But I have to ask the question, well, why do you 88% believe that you're so damn smart that the other 12% of us have to follow you? We have to do what you do. Why is that? Now, when we talk about freedom, don't we include in freedom the right to choose? Can I choose to vote or not to vote? See, what these people are telling us is that we need to go down and register to vote, and then you can choose who you want to vote for. What if I don't want to vote for none of the above? Can I write in somebody else's name? Yeah. You can write in somebody's name. Okay. Well, if I was to write in somebody's name, would he be very likely to win the election? And is it very likely that anybody else is going to write in the same name that I do? Is it very likely that 50% of the voters are going to write in that guy's name? I think everybody would say no. Well, then, since I don't want to vote for any of the above, and I want to write in somebody's name, and it isn't very likely that the guy's name I'm going to write in is going to be elected, then why do I want to take 2 hours off work and go down registered, and then take another 2 hours off work and go down and vote? And, you know, and when I take an hour off of work, it costs me $20. That's 4 hours. That's 20, 40, 60, 80. Why do I want to pay $80 to write somebody's name on a line and vote for somebody that isn't going to win? I mean, I can agree with you. I don't think that my man is going to win. And since he's not going to win, then there isn't any need for me to go down and vote for him, is there? So that's why I thought, well, I think I'll just back off and say I don't want to vote. But I don't want to give up my right to free speech. I don't want to have somebody tell me, well, now you can't complain about the circumstances that you find yourself in because you didn't go down and vote. Which would be about like saying, well, you didn't go down and buy a new television, so you can't complain. What difference does it make? I mean, if you can say you don't have a right to complain, you don't have a right to exercise free speech because you didn't vote, well, then couldn't you say, well, you don't have a right to complain, you don't have a right to free speech because you didn't buy a television set, or because you didn't buy a radio, or because you didn't buy carpet, or because you're living in an apartment, not a house? What in the hell has that got to do with whether or not I have a right to free speech? Mull that one over a little bit, would you? Well, I give you a reminder here that you're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. That's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact desk in the Law Hour. Website is updated weekly and has a radio log schedule and archives. All of it can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order one by calling the law school and asking for it. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give don't mean that the authors or publications that we're endorsing will necessarily reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour and Editorial Review may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review either. These opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone, and they don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. So if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about the cover story. Now, ordinarily, when a cover story is laid out, whether it's for the Iraq War, the Iraqis have weapons of mass destruction. Well, okay, I don't know how many countries in the world have weapons of mass destruction. I'm not even quite sure what a weapon of mass destruction is. I think it would include atomic bombs. Probably, then it ought to include hydrogen bombs. I would even go so far as to say that we've got some pretty big bombs, you know, 500-pound bombs. That's pretty massive destruction. Then we've got biological weapons, and we've got gas and chemical weapons and things like that. Now, remember, we said now because these weapons of mass destruction are in the hands of the Iraqis, we need to go to war against them, take them away from them, because this guy Saddam Hussein, he's really a bad guy. Well, over in North Korea, don't they now have a nuclear weapon, and don't they have gas, and don't they have chemicals, and aren't they bad guys, and isn't this guy, what is his name, Il-Jil or something like that, Il-Jil, he's a pretty bad guy, isn't he? Well, George Bush said he was. He said that North Korea, Iran, Iraq, I think maybe had one or two others. He said these are rogue nations. These are rogue countries. They need to be brought under control. Well, I'm sitting here saying, well, okay, if they need to be brought under control, why don't we get after it? Why don't we go attack the North Koreans and the Iranians? Let's get this show on the road. It was, as I understood it, it was 20 guys, 19 of them actually made the flights, but 20 guys from Saudi Arabia did this. Why don't we attack Saudi Arabia and punish them because it was their 20 citizens that attacked our trade towers? Just asking the question. I want you to think about it, and I just thought I'd bring it to your attention. Now, for some reason, 20 Arabians attack us, and we go to war against Iraqis. Let me ask you this. If the Koreans attacked us, would we go to war against Brazil? If Mexico attacked us, would we go to war against Canada? I mean, isn't there any logic or common sense that goes along with this? It would seem like to me that if the Iraqis attacked us, we ought to respond in kind. But I didn't hear of any attack from them. I didn't hear my president tell me that the Iraqis attacked us, and they said it was these 20 Saudis. But we got to go to war in Afghanistan because that's where this Saudi Arabian, what's his name, Obama? Oh no, it's not Obama. It was another Obama or abomination from Saudi Arabia. Anyway, we're at war now, and I'm not sitting here arguing over old news. I just wanted to bring to your attention that we have these cover stories out here, and they give us the cover story, and I don't think we look very far behind the cover story to ask questions. Osama bin Laden is probably a bad guy, and he's a Saudi Arabian. But what if he was a Mexican? Wouldn't he be just as bad? Or if he's a Saudi Arabian, well, then isn't he the 21st guy that we ought to go to war against Saudi Arabia? It looks like to me that if the Saudis over there are going to attack us, that we ought to do something about these Saudis, you know, rather than Iranians and Iraqis and Afghanis and Koreans. doesn't it? I don't know. I'll leave it to you. You people vote. I just wanted to bring it to your attention so that, you know, when you go into the voting booth, you know, next time and somebody gives you a cover story, the reason that we're giving all this money to the banks over here is so that they'll lend to us. And if we don't, you know, our economy's going to collapse and we'll have unemployment. Right? Now, if you want to legally avoid vaccination, let me tell you the answer to that riddle. We have 50 states here in the United States, and two states in the Union will not accept any excuse for not being vaccinated. That's Mississippi and West Virginia, unless you have a court order. But you can get a court order if you have a medical reason or a religious reason. The other 48 states have three ways that they deal with vaccination. A few states have personal objection, like California. I just personally don't want it. I object. And they accept that, and that's the end of the argument. Most of the states require either, one, a medical objection or a religious objection. So that eliminates most Catholics, Protestants, and Jews. Unless they've got a medical exemption, they need to get vaccinated. There's a few religious groups that are exempted. I belong to one of those religious groups. And I thought I would pass that along to you. That the idea that you need to be vaccinated because if you're not vaccinated, you're going to get sick is preposterous on its face. People go into rooms, and then they're packing disease, and they cough and sneeze. And some people get sick, and some people don't. And oftentimes, the people that get sick are the ones that have been vaccinated. And then the ones that have been vaccinated, they say, my God, can you imagine how sick I would have gotten if I hadn't been vaccinated? What happened here was the vaccination didn't prevent you from getting the disease. And that's because vaccination doesn't work. Never has, doesn't now, and never will. And the purpose for vaccination has nothing to do with preventing disease. It has to do with selling a product that you don't need, can't use, and shouldn't have, but that you want. And they want to sell it to you. And I want you to buy it. I just don't want you to force it on me. Now, let's take up the census here for a minute, because this was census year 2010 here in the United States. And for the rest of you people out there in the world, the Constitution of the United States has a clause in it that requires that the government take a census once every 10 years. And the purpose for this, in the Constitution, I tell you plainly, the purpose for this census is so that we can apportion the population and the representatives that go to our Congress. And that makes all the sense in the world, doesn't it? I wouldn't argue with that. Now, let's get down here to the nitty-gritty. I got my census form over here, and it was 84 questions long. It is true that one of the questions on the form asked me, how many people are in your household? There were 83 other questions in there, some of which asked me how many bathrooms I had, what kind of a car I drove, what kind of mileage I got, and how many miles I drove to work. Now, I want to ask you, can you tell me what relevance the brand of automobile I drive, how many miles I drive to work, and how many miles to the gallon I get has anything to do with apportioning my representative to represent me in the Congress? Send me an email, would you please? And there were a lot of other questions in there that as I looked through the form, I couldn't see any connecting link between representative government, democracy, or a Republican form of government, for that matter. Our Constitution guarantees us a Republican form of government. We don't have that. We have a democracy here. But you know, leaving that question aside, I just got to ask the question concerning the census. The census lady says to me, it's the law. And I said, can you tell me where that law is located? I always ask people, can you tell me where that law is located? I've been doing that for 30 years. Not one person has ever been able to tell me where the law is located. So get your pen and paper out here, because I'm going to tell you where it's located. I know. I can tell you. I don't participate in the census, and I don't vote. I'm not objecting to other people participating in the census. If you want to participate in the census, why should George Gordon get in the way of your participation in an activity that you desire to participate in? Now, I'm big, and I want to big-minded, and I want to let you choose for yourself as to whether you want to participate or not. Would it be all right with you if I had the same freedom to choose for myself whether or not I want to participate? The cover story that they used here in our local county was, you see, if you don't give this information affects the amount of money that we're going to get from Washington here in our county, and here in our county, when these school funds and all of these benefits that flow out of Congress are apportioned to the counties, it depends upon how many people live in the county. All right? That's the cover story. I don't take any of these benefits. I'm 70 years old and I don't draw Social Security. I'm an old man, but I don't draw welfare, food stamps. I don't participate in the governmental process here. So since I'm not on the dole and I'm not taking any of these benefits, can you tell me what the hell difference does it make whether you count me or not? I can understand if you've got people here that are on the dole and taking the benefits, and they don't sign up, they don't give the information, then the county may be ending up educating kid in school, but they don't get the funding because they don't have the right number of people in the county. But I see that. That's pretty logical. But I don't see why I should participate because I'm not on the dole. Furthermore, in the Bible, it's against the law for me as a Hebrew, an Israelite, to participate in the census. And with specificity in 2 Chronicles 24, there's an example, there's a story there, of 70,000 people dying because they did participate in the census. David was punished for conducting the census. The people were punished for participating in it. And there's a statute that says Israel shall not be numbered. And so I looked at that and I said, this is probably a good law, and the census law is probably good for people that want to participate in it and want to draw welfare and food stamps and Social Security and so on. But that doesn't make it right, and it doesn't make it good for me. And so I decided I don't want to participate in that. Now, if I don't participate in that, is there some out for me? And God love them, Congress of the United States put an out. And here's where the out is. First of all, you go to Title 13. I told you, I'll tell you where it's at. Title 13, Section 221. And then as you read through here, you'll come to Section 225, I believe it is, D. And there's an exception written in there for religious objectors. Read that. And I'm a religious objector, and I objected to it. And I think I objected to it timely. Now, for doing that, should I be punished? Now, there is a prescription for punishment in here. The cover story that we're given, remember, it's the law. And the cover story, remember, is we need this information so that we can apportion representation. And we need these numbers so that we can send the right amount of money to your county. Those are the cover stories that they give us. Okay. Now, remember, I told you I don't vote. So why am I entitled to a representative? I don't want a representative. A representative is a guardian. I don't want you to act as my guardian. I don't want to establish a guardian ward relationship with the state of Missouri or the United States of America. I already have a guardian ward relationship with the creator of the universe. The guy said to me, you shall have no other gods before me. I thought, oh my God, I've already been preempted. Even if I wanted to participate in the United States government, I got a law here that says don't do that. Now, the census law here in 221 says that if I don't give this information, if I just say no, they're going to fine me $100 and put me in jail for a year. So I looked that up, and the one-year jail sentence has been repealed. And so they're just going to fine me $100. So I looked a little bit further, and I found out the last time that they had a prosecution for somebody that wouldn't participate in the census was in 1890. Some guy said, I ain't doing it. And they prosecuted him. And I didn't get the case, and I don't know if they convicted him, but there was a prosecution. Now, the next section, 222, says, if you answer all these questions, but if you answer one of these questions falsely, we're going to fine you $500 and put you in jail for a year. Now, the word false is in there, and it's not perjured. It's just false. So there's 84 questions here. Let's suppose I answer these 84 questions. Can you look back in school? Do you remember when you took a test and you answered 84 questions on the test? Did you ever ace the test? Yes, yes, once in a while. When I was in school, I would ace a test. But boy, I'm going to tell you, it was rare, really rare. Usually, I would give at least one false answer. So I looked at these 84 questions that were on the census form, and I said, if I answer these 84 questions and I answer one of them falsely, then I could be prosecuted. And since the question was answered and the question was false and I signed the census form, I would be guilty right on the surface. I mean, the prima facie evidence of my guilt is the wrong answer. And I must concede that I could answer these 84 questions and I could answer one of them incorrectly, falsely, maybe 5 or 10. And I thought, my God, are they going to fine me? You know, if I made 10 false statements, would I get fined $5,000 10 times? Would I have to go to jail for 10 years 10 times? I don't know. It appears that if you just do the form and you get 1, 5, or 10 incorrect, but I'm not sure that that's the case. It could be cumulative. So if I refuse to answer any questions at all, the fine's $100 and no jail, but if I agree to answer the questions and get one wrong, I'm liable to go to jail for 1 year and a $500 fine. I get fined five times as much, and I get to go to jail. So I said, my common sense tells me, in all logic, I'd be better off to say, kiss off. I'm not going to answer anything on the form. The worst thing that can happen is you prosecute me, convict me, and I pay you $100. But if I agree to answer the questions under 222 and I get one of them wrong, you could prosecute me, put me in jail for a year, and fine me five times as much, $500. I get much more liability, and there's a greater possibility that I'm going to make a mistake and answer one of those 84 questions incorrectly. Isn't that just special? Now, the cover story is you don't want to go to jail. The cover story is that we need this information so we can send you money, and the cover story is we need to apportion your representative correctly. I don't think you need that for me. I don't need a representative. I am not politically incompetent. I am 100% politically incompetent. I can represent all of my political aspirations and needs all by myself. I do not need a senator or a representative to go to Washington to represent any of my political needs to the Congress of the United States. I'm not suggesting that the rest of you people in Missouri don't need a guardian to do that for you. I just want to tell you that you got one guy here in Missouri that doesn't need political representation, and I'm it. I don't need it, I don't want it, and I ain't buying it, and I'm not going to vote. Now, that doesn't mean that I would tell you shouldn't vote, or that you shouldn't participate in the census, or that you shouldn't get a vaccination, but I thought I would bring it to your attention. Vaccinations do not prevent disease, and the census does not guarantee you any political rights, and voting is not going to solve the international financial crisis, and nor is it going to put you to work. So I just thought I would bring these to your attention. Now, next time, I'm going to take up a subject here called antique firearms. Antique firearms is kind of a wild story. You know, the general consensus of opinion is that certain people can't have guns, that it's against the law. You shouldn't have a gun because you know you're a convicted felon, or you've been dishonorably discharged from the Army, or that you've been convicted for some violent crime, or you know, it could be you're a fugitive or a mental defective or an illegal alien or something like that. And did you know that there are legal firearms for prohibited persons? Yep, and the cover story is you can't, but I think you can. Next time on the Law Hour and Editorial Review. Meanwhile, I'm out of time, so let me remind you that you've been listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org. And the Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Let's see here. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and that the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. All right, I'm out of time. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.